Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a quarantined edition of the Corner Store Podcast. I am speaking on Zoom after some technical difficulty with an incredible organizer, someone who consistently puts on for culture in Chicago and beyond, and recently is featured in Time Magazine, right? Which is a big congratulations to you, the one of the founders of Slow Mo and many other things that you have attended or should attend in the city. Kristen Kaza is in the Corner Store. Welcome.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
No, thank you for being here. I imagine it's been, I mean, Time Magazine, that's brand new, right?
Yeah, that was really wild that, you know, when we got a lot of support for Slow Mo from Homo. So for people who are tuning in that are familiar with Slow Mo, you'll recognize this. For people who aren't, Slow Mo, Slow Jams for Queer Fam is a 9-year now running dance party that supports and celebrates LGBTQ people. And our party, our monthly party, is at the Whistler, third Thursday of every month, and we've never canceled it in 9 years, and we didn't want to cancel it and contribute to the disappointment and difficult experiences that people were already having, and wanted to provide something that would be uplifting and feel good, and also a sense of normalcy, something that a lot of people have grown to rely on for a really long time. So we hosted Slow Mo from Homo, a digital dance party from the interwebs, from Instagram and Facebook Live, and we broadcasted it from my living room with DJ Beady Girl, and then Jack, Audio Jack's living room, and we, you know, had all kinds of tech problems to get a lot of things out, but it was cool. And we had a lot of support. We had like over 5,000 views, and
that's amazing.
Yeah, we had tons of support with Time Magazine and Forbes, and it was, my favorite spot was on ABC, because you got to see, like, we had video of people that were interacting, and there were some people who like tricked out their houses or put in all red light bulbs, and people just had so much fun. It was great to interact with them and get a lot of support for it. And we were able to also raise, we put tickets online, so you could purchase sliding scale tickets, $5 to $20, or you could donate via Venmo at Slow Mo Parties, our account. And so with that, we were able to pay everybody who performed, because we also had dance lessons with Darlene Shear, and we also set aside $1,000 fund with the rest of the money, and we've been able to continue to pay out to other GoFundMes and organizations, and just, you know, things that have come our way. Like, we had a friend reach out who needed, you know, hormone therapy, and that's something that a lot of people who are going through it right now and don't have access to medical, urgent medical needs or finances to finance really important parts of their, you know, health and identity. So that, we had some, you know, did some grocery store runs, supported some other GoFundMes, and it's just been sort of like a great little pot to pull from to try and support as much community as we can. So we did that as first one as an experiment, and then of course we'll continue again on Thursday, the third Thursday, which is the 16th this month. A little bit different, because we'll be more isolated. When we did this, it was prior to shelter in place, so we were able to have a couple people in the house. So it'll be a little different next time, right. And we'll be experimenting with different tech platforms, but people, if they're interested, can follow Slow Mo Party on Instagram. That's where we usually update information.
Great, and we'll give that out at the end as well. But, you know, you do so many cultural events throughout the city. Where are you at now in shelter as we move into either virtual spaces, or how are you adapting as a curator and as an organizer?
Well, you know, I think initially I was kind of at the beginning of this big wave of so much online content and entertainment content, because we had Slow Mo coming up, our regular third Thursday, and about a week out, I sort of saw what was coming, because of my larger events being canceled and postponed. So I knew this was coming, even though at this point, a week in advance, the restaurants and bars, this is the 12th of March, were not closed yet. And we made an executive decision to support the safety and health of our community and to officially and formally move it online. So by the time we announced that a few days later, the restaurants and bars were closing in-person service, and it all moved very quickly over the course of a week. So by being a part of that, I think I was sort of threw myself into online content, and you know, certainly this is, you know, the groundswell that's been happening, and now we're seeing so much of this content. But I think at least in Chicago, we were a little bit on the earlier end, so we were able to get quite a bit of participation and support. My other events, other cultural things, such as like Nick Cave's, artist Nick Cave, his show The Let Go at Navy Pier, which I was really excited. That was supposed to start today or tomorrow. That is a 10-day run of the artists, if you haven't heard of them, for folks tuning in, the incredible Nick Cave. And he launched it at the Armory in New York last year. They're doing it at Navy Pier this year. And it's this immersive show with a 20 by 20 foot Mylar curtain installation. And to encourage people to come in and dance. And they had an incredible lineup of house music, Chicago house music DJs every day. And in New York, there's a cover, but in Chicago, they were going to make it free. And you could come in and interact and engage with it. And then there was a party that was to be happening a week from Thursday, which is why we were going to talk about
it. I know.
Which was the Freedom Ball. And the Freedom Ball, that's what, like, in New York Vice magazine described as, like, a pride parade on acid. And I was programming that with them. That was going to be a ball and a fashion show with categories that you could walk in and guest judges and hosts, and then, of course, house music DJs. So, you know, that was hard because that was a project I sort of felt like was the dream project for me. I love Nick Cave. I love everything that this project stands for, about letting go and sort of the party as being a political space, but also as a space to activate joy and community. But that will get remounted again. I really do have faith that that will come back. With the Chicago Reader, which is the media, you know, icon that I've been working with in different capacities for the last 11 years. That was probably one of the harder blows because I had devised something that I'd only just announced a week or two earlier, which was a new cuisine and culture festival called Tropic of Chicago, which was a celebration of tropical countries of origin during Chicago's spring break. So that was supposed to be the 11th, and we had like about 16 restaurants, all independently owned and all minority owned, because these were all restaurants from tropical countries of origin, so African, Caribbean, South American, etc. And you know, now the restaurant industry has just been turned upside down, so I don't know how that will eventually manifest. Maybe we do that next year and it's more of a fundraiser for, you know, different relief funds or for the restaurants. I'm not really sure. But those are sort of the big things I was working on. And then also MCA, the Museum of Contemporary Art, you know, they do prime time a few times a year, their museum-wide party, which I've produced a couple times, as you know. And we had that scheduled for July, and now that's moving to Halloween. So right now, a lot of people are programming stuff for October. We're all hoping that maybe in 7 months we'll be able to assemble the public in a little bit more of a normal way, but it's really hard to say.
Yeah. So now, as someone who is, I presume, out all the time, either, you know, going to your own events, planning your own events, or going to other people's events because you're a big supporter of artists throughout the city, how are you? I mean, do you feel very busy in this moment? How are you dealing with the time, and what is your time in quarantine like? Or not in quarantine, in shelter like?
Right. You know, it's really day by day, like, and it's very weather dependent for me, which things always have been for me. Today is really sunny, and I feel incredibly energized by that. I always try and spend a lot of time walking outside when I can and being by window. Yesterday was really dark. According to Chandni Nicholas, it was a horrible day for astrology. So if you felt like crap on March 31st, we can blame the stars. So it's really day by day. I think initially Slow-Mo from Homo was so good that I did that because I literally just lost all of my work in 24 hours. I had gone from hiring someone the night before to less than 24 hours later, all the work I had hired this person to support me on that I couldn't handle all on my own was gone. So that was a really, really trippy. And it wasn't even just money. It was really hard. It was sad. I felt really sad for the projects that I wasn't going to be able to bring to light or might not ever be able to, because I think some of them just won't ever happen. But I think knowing that we have a shared experience and commonality, even if there's different levels of strain or severity or struggle or access and privilege that we have, this is the first time in so long and at least in our lifetimes, where we really had this shared experience. So for me, that has really kept me humble and not getting too lost in this sort of path and rabbit hole I could go down on, as you mentioned, being a cultural producer, someone who's extremely engaged and supportive, out quite a bit. You know, it's hard on those days when I'm not feeling so great, that's difficult, but I am really motivated and inspired by the opportunity to have engagements online and the expansiveness of that. And I do really hope to see that when we come back to a time of assembling the public, when we come together and, you know, in person, that we are thinking about how we engage with our communities that cannot be there. So I think this has been very eye-opening for cultural producers and party promoters, et cetera, entertainers, to think about that accessibility of, you know, I've always thought about accessibility at parties as like, how are we making, you know, it very known about accessibility, you know, wheelchair accessibility, about volume, about flashing lights, about language, about potential violence, you know, all these things that we think about, bathrooms, of course. But I never really was thinking about our online community or people who couldn't physically be there, be it because of their ability or their health, be it because of financial reasons, or be it because they don't live there or can't get there. And I mean, for Shlomo, for example, we've got fans all over the country. So that's been very encouraging to me, to think about like this as this social distancing is through sort of like social justice too, of like how these technical tools make our content and communities a lot more accessible. So I'm really encouraged by that, and I'm really inspired by all the creativity I'm seeing from entertainers, hospitality industry, and leaders, and just people to get creative and have fun and push themselves. And for me, being someone that has, you know, been doing this work of community connection, bringing people together in person, very specifically in person, I'm not very tech savvy, which figuring out, everyone's figured out quickly. It's been good. It's been good for me to think about, you know, how to use these tools. But I'm also trying to not put too much pressure on myself to just suddenly be like a virtual world party promoter, you know?
Right. And I think that that's a good, I mean, we're figuring similar things out at YCA, and it does make me think about people who can't be in the space regularly. Of course, there's also nothing like being in the space with communing with people too. But I think to kind of bridge those spaces, once we are able to kind of, you know, as you said, kind of assemble in public or with our publics again.
Yeah.
So you've been doing this party for a long time. I mean, and you do a lot of things, of course, but how did you get into wanting to be a curator, a promoter, and to throw parties of your own?
I mean, you know, I think this really goes back really, really far. I mean, actually, you will really appreciate this. So when I was in high school, I started this club at my high school called WORD, Working on Respecting Diversity.
Let's go.
That was in like year 2000. And
where are you at in high school? Where?
I was in Vermont. So, you know, it's like super, you know, super white. But we also had class struggles with having five different towns that went to the same school. And we had, you know, it wasn't an all white school. There was kids of different races and ethnicities, and there were queer and trans kids, actually, a couple open trans kids even in 2000. And so for me, I think my mission then was really the same thing it is now, like, you know, whatever, almost 20 years later, which is like, or I guess 20 years later, which is that, you know, trying to create a culture of belonging. And so that was really, I think, like the root of that, and coming out as queer, like through that process when I was a teenager, and having a space for that. And we actually did like teacher trainings and stuff on it. So that,
wow, you guys were ahead of the curve in a lot of that, right?
Yeah. That, and then also I like was very into theater, and so I like produced our directed our school play, and then I, of course, one of the nights I had like a benefit, and we had a jazz band and spoken word, and like everyone had to dress up, and I was 17, so I think it's pretty like rooted in that, and rooted in theater and being with people. And then my first party, I'd done like a little bit of support and helping different things. It's funny, I was talking about it this morning on my Instagram Live. It was called Role Play, and it was a party where it had like a different theme, and it exists in a vacuum because this was in like 2007 or 8, And it was all on MySpace because that's what was, you know, that's what was happening at the time. MySpace was popping. It was 2007 or 8. And all of the content is in there. But my friend would, Gertie would hand make the flyers. We worked at Whole Foods and we shared this like little shoebox in an office. They would make the flyers and we had these different themes. And, we just like had these little parties in the back, and it was a micro fundraiser. It was $5 to raise money for a documentary I was producing at the time, and that sort of like got my nightlife stuff going. And then, you know, just doing a lot of different shit. It would take me forever to scram all the shit I've done over the years.
Where were those parties? You said parties in the back. Where were those parties taking place?
So that was at the Holiday Club in Uptown, or Wrigley, actually, in the back room that they had. But we got to just, like, take over this back room. And Elena, who goes by Alinka, the DJ, who's, like, Sean J. Wright's best friend and DJ partner, like, super famous DJ now. She was a DJ. I don't even remember what she played, because she's a pretty big house and techno DJ. She's Berlin-based now, but she played the music. I had a little point and shoot camera, and we would dress up in like these weird themes. It was called role play for gender benders and dresser uppers, and that sort of got that started. And then, you know, doing parties and events with the Reader and the films that I was working on for fundraisers, and then Whole Foods, and then, you know, of course with the Reader is where I really had a few years to like very much like cultivate building audience. And then in 2012 left the Reader to start my company, No Small Plans, and have since worked with, you know, ABPR and the MCA and the Reader and Nike and Ace Hotel and a bunch of other people to sort of use, you know, to create what I call parties with a purpose. So.
Yeah. So a lot of why people come to you is because of your taste, right? Or your taste level. Right. Not only like are you in the know, but your taste level, you know, Kanye said most rappers taste level ain't at my waist level. Like that's, you know, that kind of holds true for you. How are you still, you know, finding out about shit that excites you, or where do you look, or how do you keep yourself at that cutting edge, even for yourself? Because I mean, you've seen a ton of shit.
Yeah.
How do you stay excited?
That's a great question. I think staying curious is one of the key things to creativity and output. Like, you've got to stay curious. And that has been something I think that I've maintained forever since I was really young. And so I'm reading all the time. I'm always trying to find out and learn new things. And I mean, I remember, like, gosh, when I was in college and I would come to your events, and that's when I met you, like what now? Let's see. 15, you know, 16 years ago, I just really, you know, a lot of media engagement, a Reader, and at the time back in the day, it was like the Reader and Time Out and New City and everything. But now, of course, like social media and following things, it's really hard to say. I don't really have a process. I think it's just staying curious and paying attention. And I think being in more of a like curator role, what's great about that is that assembly and that instinct of putting things together. But remembering to know when it's time to lean back and let the performers and the artists do what they do to make something really special.
Yeah, no, curiosity is essential. That's one of the tools in your tool belt. But you've also gone from throwing a party or parties to now your own business. What was that learning curve like to, you know, be able to run a company?
Well, you know, when I left the Reader, I was like 27. And so I was like, if I'm going to do it, I got to do it now, when I don't care, when I don't need lots of money, when I'm not feeling comfortable. And we had redesigned the Reader, and we were doing all this events and engagement when we redesigned it to sell it and sold it to the Sun-Times. So when we sold the paper to the Sun-Times and moved from the building that it was out on East Illinois for 40-something years, it was just a really good time for me to go. And what really helped me was that I stayed on as a contractor, and I launched their first really large-scale festival. It's called the Key Ingredient Cook-Off, and it was based on a feature the Reader had where a chef challenged another chef with, like, a weird ingredient. So we did that with a bunch of Chicago notable chefs, and that really helped me because I had the Reader now as a client, not working there full-time, and then I built up my client base from there, and then had this full-circle moment a decade later when I went back to the Reader with Tracy Bame, became the publisher, and it became independently owned, and she asked me to come back for 1 year. And so I came back for 1 year last year, and then we moved back to contract again. So why I was producing the festival I mentioned earlier, and I had another 4 events on the books for this year, which hopefully we'll still get to do some things together. But shout out to the Reader and support them, because they've lost 90% of their advertising, and that we really need the Reader. It's really important. So anyway, that's sort of been that was my time frame. And so with getting started, I was really lucky. You know, I think I had the privilege of having those connections from the Reader, of different people from different cultural organizations and institutions. And I think before there was as much of this conversation around diverse and intersectional events, was something that I had been doing really from the get-go, not as a branding tactic and not as a save your ass tactic, but just because I've always wanted to advocate for women, LGBTQ folks, and communities of color. Always. So that sort of just became what it was. And of course, also local businesses and supporting as much local as possible. And that's just sort of, I think, how I built a reputation on like intersectional and, you know, joyful events. I think it's like you have a consistency over a period of time, and hopefully, like Patti Smith says, it's like your name becomes your currency.
Yeah. Yeah. And so why are queer parties the best parties, and why? And why are they so vital? You know, why does it, you know, 30, 40 years in my lifetime to being such important gathering spaces for folks?
So first of all, I think that most and a lot of great culture comes from queer trans people and black and brown people and intersections thereof. Because I think that we, and I'm speaking as, you know, as a white queer lesbian, but I think we have to be creative. Creativity and community is our salvation, is our outlet. And we've been doing that, you know, that's legacy for us, for all, you know, I think people who come from one or more of those marginalized identities. And I think for queer people, historically, gathering in party spaces and music and dance is just a part of our legacy. And while we have like you know, of course we have a lot more social acceptance and a lot more outlets, and of course the internet has provided a lot of visibility and ways for people to connect, I still think it's so important that we have that time together. And so, you know, that's really always been my mission. I think seeing yourself reflected is such important affirmation. It gives you hope. It gives you validation, and we all need that. So I think when you think about why queer parties are so fabulous, it's because, you know, the dance floor is a revolutionary space and place. It always has been, it always will be. And I think that queer people will always use music and dance and gathering as this, as an outlet for connection, for affirmation, for creativity, and you know, honestly, for salvation.
Yeah, no, that's real. As a white person in so many spaces that are non-white, how do you continue to operate in a way that is, you know, cognizant of your identity and also, you know, very respectful of the spaces that you're in? How often do you wrestle with that? How do you navigate that?
Yeah, no, I'm glad that you asked that. You know, I think it kind of, a lot of times it just goes back to, it's asking yourself a simple question, which is why? Why am I doing this? You know, why am I saying this? Or why am I positioning it this way? Or why do I want to do this? And the why is really important to ground yourself. I think celebration has always been such a focal point of my work. And so for me, I think it's sort of twofold, which is like that spotlight and celebration, giving platform to other people. And it's also the currency, right? It's also the financial element of it, because that's important as well. Like who's benefiting culturally and financially from this? And no doubt as a producer, I am benefiting culturally, socially, and financially, sometimes 1, 2, or 3 of those things with a lot of my work, because I do a lot of work with very diverse populations and a lot of black and brown and queer and trans people. So I think it's twofold of the like, how am I using my resources and my platform? And making sure that I'm also checking myself like, wait, Hold on. Checking in with myself, maybe when someone's not going to check me because I don't feel comfortable or they get nervous about it or they just shouldn't have to. So I think it's the process of that. I think it's also really important to listen. I've definitely, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, like, you know, I get feedback constantly. And something that I really truly believe is that feedback is a gift. And when you think of it as a gift, you are receiving it, you're grateful for it, as opposed to putting up your defenses, and you can just hear so much more. And I think a lot of people just want to be heard, or, you know, they want more than just be heard, but that's at minimum. And so often when we are in a position of privilege, it's our instinct to put up a defense. But when you get in a habit of taking that down, you can just, you know, receive so much more. So in terms of, like, how I navigate that, I think it's sort of almost a default that I usually look to queer and trans and Black and brown people when I'm doing programming, because A, it's that platform to lift them up and to shift that paradigm of so much resources and wealth going to white and cis and straight folks. So that's just really the biggest part of it. But also, I'm going to be really honest after giving this whole explanation and going back to your question you asked before this, I think that queer people and people of color are usually making some of the best art and doing some of the greatest shit. And so it makes sense that the people that I often work with and the creative people that I want to put the shine on are, you know, from those various communities. So I think that, you know, staying open, listening, and remembering the priority of using the platform and knowing that your work is never done. Like, there's no end point to this. You're not like, okay, cool, now I've really mastered this, you know, wokeness or whatever. You've got to keep learning and being open, receptive, and receptive to other people's feedback, but also doing that work on your own to read and observe and listen and to just always be doing better.
Yeah, no, that's real. And I think it goes what you said earlier about curiosity is also, you know, the curiosity with yourself and the communities that you're entering and, you know, being a, you know, I mean, kind of just generally a responsible citizen. But then, you know, as our identities become, you know, pronounced in certain spaces, I think to be hyper aware of these things, you know.
Right. And I mean, I'm glad that you mentioned that about the awareness. I think that's something else that is really important, because sometimes people will ask them, I think it's good, right? People are starting to get more on this mentality of like, oh, is that event for me? Should I, because, you know, I'm an event producer, so let's go with that. I will get those questions from oh, can I come to slow-mo? And I'm like, yeah, but how about if you see a line, maybe wait until the line's done. Like, there are things that we can do. And I think that for me, at least, I don't want to operate from a place of, like, you know, guilt. I don't think that really does a lot for us, not because that's not real, but I think when you're like, oh, cool, this is, I get it, you're saying, yes, I can come, but, like, maybe, oh, I see a line, that's just an awareness thing. And I think that sometimes we overthink this stuff a little too much, and it's something like that, like, you know, you hear about an event, and you're like, is that a place for me? Ask an organizer and just be like, hey, I want to respect what this space is, but I also want to support it. Sometimes supporting it means you send some funds so that you can throw it that way to the performers, you know?
Right.
Sometimes that means, yes, buying a ticket and not expecting to be on a guest list, right? Sometimes that means it's a packed show and you're going to chill back a little bit further in the back. Like, I think it's about just having awareness of, like, your body, your presence, your attitude really makes a big difference. I think when people who are trying to be in an intentional space where they can't be in these spaces where they see themselves and feel safe enough in those spaces, it's hard when you feel like someone's coming in and has no awareness of themselves in that space. So I think that that's, like, a really good place to start, is just, like, how am I moving about in this space and in my everyday life? Because we're so sometimes unaware of this shit that we do, whether we're, like, going to a bar or on the CTA or whatever.
Facts. Do you consider yourself an artist?
That's so funny. I don't know that anyone's ever even asked me that. I don't know. I mean, I don't... I guess, like, I always just think of myself as, like, a as a supporter of artists, as a champion, a gatherer, you know. But I think there is, I will say, I think there is definitely an art to building, you know, community spaces. There's an art to engagement for sure. I don't personally very frequently identify as an artist, but yeah, I think there's art involved in it.
Well, I ask that because I do consider you an artist, and you know, for a lot of reasons. One, you know, the homie, the street artist who passed, Chicago street artist Brooks Golden, used to write, "The art is the culture." And I think, you know, there's an art to organizing, and there's an art to culture making and curating, and you know, you do that, you know, really better than anyone. But also, like, check your IG, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. You stay pulling off, like, very fly fits all the time, and, you know what I mean?
Although now people, like, with the quarantine, are catching me in the home life situation, so tonight I'm actually, is a total experiment. This will be later when people hear this on the taping, but I think I'm going to do it every Wednesday, but who knows, in times of quarantine, things change all the time. I'm doing Wine and Wigs Wednesdays. So my hair, I was joking about, I wear very short hair, and it's been a month since I've seen the hairdresser, and I usually get my hair cut every couple weeks. So I've been joking about pulling the wigs out, and last week my partner Alexis and I went through my wigs. I have a bunch of them, and we just like put on Whitney Houston, we poured some wine, and we just danced around the house in wigs. And so I made a joke about doing it, and then I guess I am going to do it. So tonight I texted some friends this morning, Cameron Esposito, who's a longtime friend of mine, very well-known now, a comic who just came out with a new book, Save Yourself, which is a bestseller in the last week, which is awesome. She's going to come on for a few minutes and read some of the book, and Kiara Lanier is going to sing some Whitney Houston. So it was fun because both those are two friends of mine that moved from Chicago, and they're in LA, but they're Chicago, you know, born and raised, and we're just going to wear our wigs and drink some wine and talk with some folks, and I'm going to bring in some other people on Instagram Live if they're wearing their wigs. It's, you know, all that's needed. So by the time this comes out, maybe I'll have, you know, another Wine and Wigs Wednesday. Who knows?
So you can't even help yourself. You know what I mean? Everything's an opportunity to do fly shit, really.
You know,
to bring people in.
It's good. I think that what's been cool about this, though, is trying to not overthink it. And I think that's where I've gotten stuck, is like, ooh, we got to have all these flashing lights. We did Sloma from Homo. We had, you know, light set up. Craig Granowski, who does a lot of lighting for Smart Art, he came to my house and set it up. We had all these plants I had moved around. We had Darlene Shear, the, you know, everyone's favorite, world famous Darlene Shear, did dance lessons. And that was so incredible. We are not going to be able to do that as we are now all self-isolated. So I'm trying to remind myself to, like, it's okay to not have, like, a full show and stage in your house, you know?
Yeah.
You know, I think that the what is it called? The expectations are not as high. I think people are just happy to see and have opportunities to engage. So.
I think,
you know,
that's,
we're all out here doing the best we can.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think we need space to do that, to see one another and to connect.
Definitely.
So all right, so what are the ways that people connect with all that you do online in terms of Sloma, in terms of your company, in terms of your own personal platform? Where can people go and find out about all the stuff you're doing?
Well, I think Instagram's a pretty good way. That's how, you know, we all seem to be connecting these days. So at Kristen Kaza and at Sloma Party. And we didn't even talk about Reunion, which is crazy. I don't know what I was thinking, not mentioning Reunion.
Well, shit, let's do it. Let's talk about it now.
So Reunion is, that's like such an integral part of, oh, sorry, Elijah. So Elijah, my dear friend Elijah McKinnon, and I started a sliding scale event space and work studio called Reunion, which is in Humboldt Park, and it is a sliding scale event space intentionally created with LGBTQ people and communities of color in mind to make work freely. Space is such a huge barrier for so many artists to be able to make work financially, but also, you know, uniquely because of their identities, the things that not all spaces are thinking about to make those spaces accessible. So Elijah McKinnon and I started that space 4 years ago. and we have events there. Predominantly, it's also rented on sliding scale for artists and communities and organizations to use it. We've had a lot of projects that have started there, like Black Realm Ohm used to do self-care Sunday yoga there. Did, you know, that went on for almost 2 years in Al Lawrence and in LA, of course. Space Babes have done their markets there, YCA's. I mean, we've had tons and tons of organizations that have taken advantage of the space. It's, you know, it's sad because Reunion, I think the magic of Reunion is the space itself and people being there together. But we're doing a little bit of online content. So at Reunion Shy on Instagram, and we're doing something on Fridays called Lunch and Learn. And, or no, that's not, that's what it is. It's called Let's Do Lunch. And it was supposed to be in person, but our way of trying to really focus on giving the community some educational opportunities, because also education, there's obviously so many barriers to education and continued learning. So this Friday is a little bit more fun. It's a plants from home little workshop. And then we'll have future ones that are going to be about, like legal, stealing legal stuff in contracts as artists, and other things like that, that are just really essential tools for artists to be able to have that we might not have had access to for a variety of different reasons. So we're doing that with Reunion and sort of pausing a lot of other things because it is a volunteer ran space that is a collective of different small groups that pay the rent every month. So we really hope that Reunion can continue because it's a very crucial space, but it's really TBD. So when the time comes for us to start, you know, assembling together again, you know, we'll get it up and on and popping at Reunion, but it's a little bit scary right now because we do depend on those sliding scale donations and rentals.
Yeah.
But hopefully in the next couple months, we'll get things up and running there again. So Reunion Shy for you know, those things. Slow-mo party, we've got more stuff coming up with Slow-mo on the 16th. We'll do Slow-mo from Homo again. We're also talking about doing a few other things that we haven't announced yet, like R&B trivia and maybe like erotica live readings with DJ sets.
Wow.
I'm revealing things on the podcast right now. We're throwing a bunch of stuff around, but that I'm gonna do, you know, between those three things, Reunion and Slow-mo, and then my personal Tristan Casa. My websites are all out of date. That's one of my quarantine projects, is like update the websites, which I probably won't do.
Well, it sounds like you're not gonna have time with all the stuff that you already got planned. So
I hate passive projects.
Well, you know, I really appreciate all the stuff that you do, both in the world and even from your home. And, you know, thank you.
I appreciate you for the context for the people listening. We've been knowing each other like 18 years?
Yeah. We've done a good amount of stuff together and more in the future. You know, I always love working with you and you make great contributions to the city and to the culture. And thanks so much for being on the Corner Store. You mind if we take a selfie before we get out of here?
All
right, I will. Shout out our super producer, DJ Cashera. Big up Boss Man Todd Manley. Thank you to our official Corner Store photog, Mercedes Zapata. Salutes to the Snack Door Max. Also, please, y'all, follow our Instagram. It's corner_pod on IG, on Twitter. Tell us who you want to see in the Corner Store. And also, please consider dropping a couple of dollars into our Patreon account. It's patreon.com/cornerstore_pod.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.